I often marvel over different answers that people give to the most obvious of questions. Today is Tu B'Shvat, and I always enjoy asking a couple of questions. What is the Hebrew date of Tu B'Shvat? Sometimes I don't get an answer. Of course, the answer is, well, Tu B'Shvat, the 15th day of the month of Shvat. One time I remember asking, what is the day immediately after Tu B'Shvat? And I received as an answer, 3 B'Shvat. As one is aware, Tu B'Shvat is connected to the agricultural cycle. And depending on the year, as to which tithes one gives, whether it's Maaser Sheni, which 10% is given in Yerushalayim that's brought, or perhaps Maaser Ani on the third and sixth year given to the poor, Tu B'Shvat is a cutoff date when it comes to trees as to tithing. Similarly, when it comes to Arla, the first 3 years, one is not to partake of the fruits. When does a tree have the status of completing a year? We don't have to know exactly its birth. But once it has the status of a tree, even if it's in the beginning of the month of Shvat, or even the 13th or 14th day of that month, Tu B'Shvat comes, it becomes a second year. But Tu B'Shvat perhaps should have more meaning. Some people eat various dried fruits, and what's become popular in this day and age, in the year 2010, are Tu B'Shvat seders, where there's 4 cups of juice in which the wine becomes increasingly diluted until finally it changes color, similar to the change of the seasons. Certainly no source in the Minhagim of old that requires such a thing. But at our Kiddush, being that it is Tu B'Shvat, as well as I'm sure in many other shuls, there will be one fruit in particular that will make its way to many tables. And this fruit is consumed not because of its delicious taste, far from it, although some consider it as a chocolate substitute. I'm referring to, in English, a carob, charuvim, or most famously in Yiddish, boxer. Boxer, in which we are not serving today, perhaps for your benefit so that your teeth do not get shattered on Shabbos, there must be a reason, a source, some symbolism and significance as to why we eat the carob on Tu B'Shvat. And perhaps with understanding what this fruit represents and what's special and unique about it, maybe we can glean and understand a little bit more about what Tu B'Shvat could be in this day and age, something relevant to all of us. I'd like to share with you a famous Gemara in Tainus on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. Story of a great man whose name was Choni Hamagel, Choni the Circle Maker. Choni the Circle Maker is not given this name because of his expertise in geometry, but because of a separate story. He drew a circle around himself and he prayed with all of his might, with the greatest level of kavanah, saying he will not budge from the spot unless rain comes. Therefore, from that point on, he was called Choni the Circle Maker, Choni Hamagel. Perhaps a less famous story is the one I would like to share with you. A story in which perhaps we've heard of, but maybe in a fairy tale of Rimpfing Winkle, a man who fell asleep for many years. Tichon Yemagil, just like all of us, when we study the Torah, sometimes we're bothered with sentences, psukim, that just don't make much sense. Says the Gemara that Kol Yamav Shel Osot Tzadik, his entire life, he was bothered by one sentence. In the sentence we say every Shabbos before we bench, Shir HaMalos B'Shuv Hashem Es Shiva Siyoin Hayinu Kecholmim. Shir HaMalos, Hashem will return the captivity of Zion, we will be like dreamers. And this is referring to the exile, when the Jewish people were in exile of Babel, Babylonia, for 70 years. On this, Tichon Yemagil said, doesn't make sense. What does it mean that we'll be sleeping? Mi'ika dinoim shimin shnin b'chalma. Who could sleep 70 years? It doesn't make any sense. That pasuk bothered him all the time. And the Gemara tells us a story that he happened to be traveling, walking on the road, and he saw a man who was planting a tree. And yes, that tree was charuva, was a carob, was boxer. He looked at him and said, you know, I'm pretty hungry. I'm wondering when this tree will bear fruit. He says, you want to know when? I'll tell you. It's going to take me 70 years until I'll be able to enjoy the fruits, until this carob will finally be able to be eaten. And on this, Tichon Yemagil did not understand. It was very strange. Why would you plant such a thing if you cannot derive any benefit from such a tree? He said, is it clear to you that you will live another 70 years? Pshitalach, the Chayesh Shimon Shnin. And then the Gemara tells us his answer. And after his answer, Choni went down, sat down, and he got tired, and he fell asleep. And he woke up, and he noticed that that place in which there were just seeds being planted in the ground, now there was a huge tree, there was branches, and there was fruit that came forth from it. The man picking those fruits, that boxer, that carob. He looked at the man and he said, are you the one that planted this tree? And a man responded to Choni, he said, no, it wasn't me. It wasn't even my father. I'm the grandson of the man who planted this tree. And at that point, Tichon Yemagil said, Shma mina, deny me shivin shnin. I must have slept for at least 70 years. So what did Tichon Yemagil do? He went, as typically you would imagine a scholar, he went to the Beit Medrash, to the study hall to learn Torah. And he heard that the rabbis were so happy and they were so impressed that they said that their teachings, that which they've learned, is so clear, just like the good old days, the days of Tichon Yemagil. And this Choni looked at them and he said, Ananihu, guys, it's me, I'm alive, I'm here. And they looked at him in complete disbelief. Tichon Yemagil is not alive. He died, some say, in battle, but was many years ago. Completely different generation. And on this, the Gemara concludes with the words of Tichon Yemagil. Long before Patrick Henry said, give me liberty and give me death, Choni said, O Chavrusa, O Misusa, give me companionship or give me death. What exactly is the meaning of the story? What is Choni teaching us? What exactly is going on? And how does this answer his question? The question of sleeping for 70 years. We know that when it came to the exile of Babel between the first and second temple, after the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and before the second one was built, we didn't sleep, we all lived. We were awake. So what does it mean? If we look at the pasuk, it doesn't say that we were dreaming. It doesn't say we were sleeping. It says, Hayinu kicholmim. It's as though we were dreaming. It's as though we were asleep. Zichron HaMagel, when he saw that man planting that tree, he did not understand, why would you ever do anything except for yourself, except for your generation? What is the purpose of planting a tree in which you will get no benefit from, that no one else in your generation will be able to reap of its fruits? A person who has that attitude is comparable to a person who lives their entire life as though it's a dream. David HaMelech says in Tehillim that the years of our life, 70 shana, 70. It's coming to tell us not just the golos of Bavel, but how we can conduct our entire lives. We can be living and breathing, but just like a person who is sleeping, their life is not very productive. They're not really doing anything. They're not contributing to society, for they're living in a complete dream within themselves. Choni's mistake was that the focus was only on himself, to the point that he said, I don't know why you would ever plant such a tree. Why do you need to think about or care about anyone other than yourself? And perhaps metaphorically, he slept. He slept on it and thought about this and contemplated and imagined what it would be like for him 7 years later to wake up. Or perhaps it really happened. And to realize that no one recognizes you, that you're insignificant, your life means nothing. On that he said, O Chavrusa Misusa, give me companionship or give me death. I need to have a connection outside of myself. I need, at this point now I realize, the importance of others, of thinking about others. And if I'm not able to connect to another person, if I'm all alone, that is comparable to Misa. It's comparable to someone who is sleeping away, for they're sleeping away their life. It's very fascinating that perhaps this is the message of this carob. When we eat a carob on Tu B'Shvat, we're not just eating it. Look at it and think about the message of what a carob represents. And perhaps that will give us an insight as to what Tu B'Shvat could mean to all of us. For when Choni asked the question, why do you plant this tree? He was given an answer. And the answer was, Ki hechi d'shas leili avahati, that just as my ancestors planted those trees for me, knowing that they themselves would never live to see them fully grown, shas leinami livra'i, so too I plant them for my children. When you hold that carob, you did not plant that tree. Someone from a previous generation was sensitive and thought that perhaps you would benefit from this world, even though they themselves will not benefit. So they planted a tree. And the message perhaps of eating the boxer is to have that same understanding, comparable to Earth Day, that Tu B'Shvat is a time to contemplate about the previous generation that was gracious and sensitive to leave over a world not for themselves, but for my benefit. That is what this carob represents. And then we have to ask ourselves a further question. Today, what am I doing to ensure that the world that I am enjoying, that I'm benefiting from, will be there long after I'm gone. Instead of depleting the earth from its nutrients and natural resources, what are we doing, not for our selfish benefit, what are we doing to ensure that the next generation will enjoy what we have? What are we doing to ensure that next generation will be able to have the same things that we are able to enjoy? That's the question that one asks when they hold the carob. What are we doing about it? What are we doing about it this Tisha B'Av? And I believe, as we've all been familiar, the tragedy of the earthquake that occurred in Haiti just a few weeks ago, in which there was utter devastation, countless deaths, already in a country which is devastated with poverty, this catastrophe in which buildings, schools, hospitals were just flattened. What are Jews doing about it? Are we thinking about ourselves? Or do we think of others? And we know that Israel was among the very first countries to respond to this devastation, to this tragedy of Haiti. And perhaps the reason why we were able to respond so quickly is because of the constant issues that we face. Constant terrors, bombs being dropped, constant threats to our lives. And therefore, perhaps we have the better understanding, the technology and the ability to give this information over, not to our neighbors, but all the way over the Atlantic to be able to get to Haiti, faster than countries who are neighboring the country of Haiti. When we hear such wonderful things, we must ask, is Israel getting the positive recognition that it deserves? We all know the answer is absolutely not. You're hard-pressed to find in any newspaper, on any television show or any radio, discussion of what Israel has done in contributing to this devastation of Haiti. And perhaps one can hear this and immediately respond the obvious answer as to why this is the case, and it's anti-Semitism. But I believe there's a positive spin. When something terrible happens, when a Jew does something which is wrong, when Israel does something in which perhaps has a negative approach, the UN immediately jumps over on it, and Israel's condemned. When a Jewish person makes a small little mistake or a white-collar crime, it's the front page of every single paper. And the reason for that is because that's a chiddush. For a Jew to do something wrong, a Jew to be selfish, a Jew not to think of another person, that is something which is surprising and is newsworthy. But for Israel to support Haiti and to be there for another person, this is no chiddush. Jewish people are rachmanim, we're gomri chasadim, we're compassionate, we're kind and thoughtful and giving. That's within ourselves, that's innate. To the point that the world recognizes that even though a Jew does and thinks and is considerate and is selfless, comparable to the carob, that's not something which makes news. Ashreinu matoiv chalkeinu. How fortunate and praiseworthy and lucky we are to be part of a tradition, of a religion that embraces this notion of thinking about others, that embraces the message of the boxer of the carob, that understands the true meaning of Tu B'Shvat. Good Shabbos.